Hello. This is the Pearson EdExcel International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2014. This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen.
Part 1. In this part, you will hear the principal of a school talking about the arrangements for Open Day. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than two words and or a number for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed gap. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good morning, everyone. I hope you all had a good weekend. At this morning's meeting, I will be focusing on the arrangements for Open Day next month. Please make sure that you have a pen and paper handy to note down details. So let's get down to business. This year, Open Day will be on Saturday, the 19th of May, from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. Students who are directly involved in the event will need to be here by 12:30, however, as we need to make sure everything is in place for this important day. We are hoping it will be a bigger event than last year, and expect most of our visitors will be the families of current and future students. We have also invited several VIPs to take part this year, and we may well see a few old familiar faces in the crowds also, which is always nice. We have decided to limit the areas we use for Open Day this time. In the past, all the teaching units were used. But this time only red block will be open, as blocks blue and green will be out of action due to scheduled repairs being carried out on the heating system that weekend. All other parts of the school will be in use. This means the science lab, library, main hall, sports hall, and quad will also be open to visitors. We have three special events organised, which will be held in the quad if it is sunny, but if it rains, we will use the main hall instead, and these will be on throughout the afternoon. The school choir will be first on the stage at 2 o'clock. They are planning to perform songs from last year's musical. Then at 3:30, the judo club will be giving us a display of their talents. And finally, at 4:30, the school's acoustic guitar group will be entertaining us with a selection of classical music from Spain. As you've probably heard, they won the local school's competition last month. In other parts of the school, there will be activities going on throughout the afternoon. The library will be the venue for a photography competition. We intend to announce the winners that same day. Please could you encourage as many people as possible to submit their favourite holiday pictures by Wednesday, the 16th of May. In the sports hall, we are going to have a friendly basketball competition taking place during the course of the afternoon. And in the science block, several rooms will be devoted to illustrating how the human body works, which will include interactive demonstrations related to the eye, the nervous system, and the brain. The teaching block will also have displays of students' work from their English, history, and geography classes, and the drama group will be holding a workshop in several classrooms. So that's an overview of what will be going on throughout Open Day. Many of these events will be organised at class, club, or group level, but you will also need to be clear as to the role certain classes will have on the day. Year 9 students, you will be responsible for running the tea table, which will be located just outside the main hall. We need 10 students to volunteer to serve on this table. All equipment and refreshments will be provided by the school, so there is not a lot to prepare in advance. Year 10 prefects will be taking care of our special guests. I will need only a few students, probably 6, for this. These students would need to be available all afternoon in order to accompany them around the school, showing them as much as they want to see and answering all their questions. And as for Year 11 students, we will need about 20 of you to help Mr. Fredericks, the facilities manager, out in the car park, as he will need help with all the vehicles that will be arriving on the day. We will be using the football fields for additional parking. So that's about it for now, but we will need to meet again at the same time, that's 11 o'clock, next week. Could you let me have the names of those students who would like to be involved then?
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Good morning, everyone. I hope you all had a good weekend. At this morning's meeting, I will be focusing on the arrangements for Open Day next month. Please make sure that you have a pen and paper handy to note down details. So let's get down to business. This year, Open Day will be on Saturday, the 19th of May, from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. Students who are directly involved in the event will need to be here by 12:30, however, as we need to make sure everything is in place for this important day. We are hoping it will be a bigger event than last year, and expect most of our visitors will be the families of current and future students. We have also invited several VIPs to take part this year, and we may well see a few old familiar faces in the crowds also, which is always nice. We have decided to limit the areas we use for Open Day this time. In the past, all the teaching units were used. But this time only red block will be open, as blocks blue and green will be out of action due to scheduled repairs being carried out on the heating system that weekend. All other parts of the school will be in use. This means the science lab, library, main hall, sports hall, and quad will also be open to visitors. We have 3 special events organised, which will be held in the quad if it is sunny, but if it rains, we will use the main hall instead, and these will be on throughout the afternoon. The school choir will be first on the stage at 2 o'clock. They are planning to perform songs from last year's musical. Then at 3:30, the judo club will be giving us a display of their talents. And finally, at 4:30, the school's acoustic guitar group will be entertaining us with a selection of classical music from Spain. As you've probably heard, they won the local school's competition last month. In other parts of the school, there will be activities going on throughout the afternoon. The library will be the venue for a photography competition. We intend to announce the winners that same day. Please could you encourage as many people as possible to submit their favourite holiday pictures by Wednesday, the 16th of May. In the sports hall, we are going to have a friendly basketball competition taking place during the course of the afternoon. And in the science block, several rooms will be devoted to illustrating how the human body works, which will include interactive demonstrations related to the eye, the nervous system, and the brain. The teaching block will also have displays of students' work from their English, history, and geography classes, and the drama group will be holding a workshop in several classrooms. So that's an overview of what will be going on throughout Open Day. Many of these events will be organised at class, club, or group level, but you will also need to be clear as to the role certain classes will have on the day. Year 9 students, you will be responsible for running the tea table, which will be located just outside the main hall. We need 10 students to volunteer to serve on this table. All equipment and refreshments will be provided by the school, so there is not a lot to prepare in advance. Year 10 prefects will be taking care of our special guests. I will need only a few students, probably 6, for this. These students would need to be available all afternoon in order to accompany them around the school, showing them as much as they want to see and answering all their questions. And as for Year 11 students, we will need about 20 of you to help Mr. Fredericks, the facilities manager, out in the car park, as he will need help with all the vehicles that will be arriving on the day. We will be using the football fields for additional parking. So that's about it for now, but we will need to meet again at the same time, that's 11 o'clock, next week. Could you let me have the names of those students who would like to be involved then?
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear a radio program in which two people, John and Mary, discuss fruit and vegetables. Listen and answer the questions. Write no more than 2 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Welcome, everyone, to today's food show on healthy eating. I'm Mary Johnson, and my co-presenter is John Marshall.
In the programme today, we will be discussing which is best, canned, frozen, or fresh fruit and vegetables. So, what have you found out, Mary?
Well, from what I've read so far, when your parents tell you that it is important to eat fresh fruit and vegetables, they are right. They are full of nutrients, such as vitamins and minerals, which protect us from diseases.
So you would always recommend them?
Yes, I think I actually would, based on my research over the past week.
Well, that's where I start to disagree with you. I don't think it's as straightforward as that. What I have found is that sometimes canned food can be more nutritious than fresh and frozen fruit and vegetables.
But surely tinned fruit and vegetables can't be as good for you. During production, they lose a lot of nutrients, especially vitamin C, which is essential for the immune system.
Okay, that's certainly true, but...
And then lots of salt and sugar are added to the food to preserve it. Tinned fruit often comes in very heavy syrup.
Well, not all does. They can be avoided. These days, more and more canned fruit and vegetables come in water or natural juices. It definitely pays to read the food label carefully before you make your purchase, as manufacturers are trying hard to reduce the salt and sugar content in all canned food. Parents are particularly aware of this, as they are advised to avoid giving salty foods to children under 5.
And I suppose you could also rinse the vegetables in water once you have opened the tin.
Yes, that's a very good idea. Also, there are some vegetables which are actually more nutritious when they are canned. For example, when tomatoes are cooked, the level of one nutrient, an antioxidant, actually increases. In fact, tomato paste has more than 6 times the level of this antioxidant than fresh ones.
That's amazing. I didn't know that at all.
Yes, and fresh green beans lose about 75% of their nutrients if they are left in the fridge for more than a week. Sometimes it really is worth considering canned produce.
Okay, but I don't think the taste of tinned fruit and vegetables is as good.
You're right, it isn't. But the fruit and vegetables do need to be really fresh.
And you also have a far greater choice.
Yes, but that's true only up to a point. When you go to the supermarket and see the wonderful range of fruits and vegetables on offer, what you don't know is that those cabbages you are looking at were picked about 2 weeks ago, then put on a lorry or plane and sent hundreds or thousands of miles before they reach their destination. What is worse, they are often exposed to heat, which degrades them even further. And when you buy them, you don't eat them straight away. You put them in the fridge or a bowl for several days before you get round to having them.
Fresh doesn't sound so good if you put it that way. But surely they are still better than tinned or frozen.
They are, but only if you harvest them when they are ripe and eat them the same day.
How is that possible?
Well, if you grow them yourself in your garden.
But that's just unrealistic for most people. We all lead busy lives, and some of us do not have a garden.
I understand that. But that doesn't mean we can't buy fruit and vegetables once or twice a week and prepare them the day we get them. For the other days, frozen and canned vegetables might be healthier than using what might have been fresh ones.
So what's the difference between frozen and tinned? Which is better?
Usually, frozen vegetables are the better choice. They tend to be processed at their peak of ripeness, which is when they are most nutrient-packed. Also, they are preserved without any further ingredients. Other pluses are that it is a useful way to keep handy fruits and vegetables that are out of season, such as berries in the winter. And they are often more economical to buy than fresh equivalents.
But then the texture of frozen food is not as good, because ice crystals often form on the surface of the food and inside the food itself.
Yes, and I've noticed that natural juices may escape during thawing.
So when would you buy tinned produce?
Well, if you are on a budget, canned foods are cheaper than fresh. And one other thing. It is always a good idea to have a few cans on hand in case of emergencies. When there are power cuts, for example, that's when everything in the fridge spoils and the canned stuff will be fine.
Another good thing is that you can recycle the packaging.
Absolutely. I also tend to buy canned foods when I can't find them in frozen or fresh form. You can store canned food for a long time, and I often do not have enough room in the fridge or freezer for everything. Then, having a few cans in the cupboard is always useful.
So the bottom line is that fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables are the best choice, as long as you eat them as soon as you buy or pick them. Frozen is the next best thing, and tinned fruit and vegetables are good for filling in gaps when you can't get them any other way, or you need to store food for long periods, or without refrigeration.
Yes, that's about it in a nutshell. Oh yes, and remember to make sure that any cans you buy are not leaking, as you run the risk of serious illness if you eat food from them. Otherwise, it's all about balancing what's best for you in your situation.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Welcome, everyone, to today's food show on healthy eating. I'm Mary Johnson, and my co-presenter is John Marshall.
In the programme today, we will be discussing which is best, canned, frozen, or fresh fruit and vegetables. So, what have you found out, Mary?
Well, from what I've read so far, when your parents tell you that it is important to eat fresh fruit and vegetables, they are right. They are full of nutrients, such as vitamins and minerals, which protect us from diseases.
So you would always recommend them?
Yes, I think I actually would, based on my research over the past week.
Well, that's where I start to disagree with you. I don't think it's as straightforward as that. What I have found is that sometimes canned food can be more nutritious than fresh and frozen fruit and vegetables.
But surely tinned fruit and vegetables can't be as good for you. During production, they lose a lot of nutrients, especially vitamin C, which is essential for the immune system.
Okay, that's certainly true, but...
And then lots of salt and sugar are added to the food to preserve it. Tinned fruit often comes in very heavy syrup.
Well, not all does. They can be avoided. These days, more and more canned fruit and vegetables come in water or natural juices. It definitely pays to read the food label carefully before you make your purchase, as manufacturers are trying hard to reduce the salt and sugar content in all canned food. Parents are particularly aware of this, as they are advised to avoid giving salty foods to children under 5.
And I suppose you could also rinse the vegetables in water once you have opened the tin.
Yes, that's a very good idea. Also, there are some vegetables which are actually more nutritious when they are canned. For example, when tomatoes are cooked, the level of one nutrient, an antioxidant, actually increases. In fact, tomato paste has more than 6 times the level of this antioxidant than fresh ones.
That's amazing. I didn't know that at all.
Yes. And fresh green beans lose about 75% of their nutrients if they are left in the fridge for more than a week. Sometimes it really is worth considering canned produce.
OK, but I don't think the taste of tinned fruit and vegetables is as good.
You're right, it isn't. But the fruit and vegetables do need to be really fresh.
And you also have a far greater choice.
Yes, but that's true only up to a point. When you go to the supermarket and see the wonderful range of fruits and vegetables on offer, what you don't know is that those cabbages you are looking at were picked about 2 weeks ago, then put on a lorry or plane and sent hundreds or thousands of miles before they reach their destination. What is worse, they are often exposed to heat, which degrades them even further. And when you buy them, you don't eat them straight away. You put them in the fridge or a bowl for several days before you get round to having them.
Fresh doesn't sound so good if you put it that way. But surely they are still better than tinned or frozen.
They are, but only if you harvest them when they are ripe and eat them the same day.
How is that possible?
Well, if you grow them yourself in your garden.
But that's just unrealistic for most people. We all lead busy lives, and some of us do not have a garden.
I understand that. But that doesn't mean we can't buy fruit and vegetables once or twice a week and prepare them the day we get them. For the other days, frozen and canned vegetables might be healthier than using what might have been fresh ones.
So what's the difference between frozen and tinned? Which is better?
Usually, frozen vegetables are the better choice. They tend to be processed at their peak of ripeness, which is when they are most nutrient-packed. Also, they are preserved without any further ingredients. Other pluses are that it is a useful way to keep handy fruits and vegetables that are out of season, such as berries in the winter. And they are often more economical to buy than fresh equivalents.
But then the texture of frozen food is not as good, because ice crystals often form on the surface of the food and inside the food itself.
Yes, and I've noticed that natural juices may escape during thawing.
So when would you buy tinned produce?
Well, if you are on a budget, canned foods are cheaper than fresh. And one other thing. It is always a good idea to have a few cans on hand in case of emergencies. When there are power cuts, for example, that's when everything in the fridge spoils and the canned stuff will be fine.
Another good thing is that you can recycle the packaging.
Absolutely. I also tend to buy canned foods when I can't find them in frozen or fresh form. You can store canned food for a long time, and I often do not have enough room in the fridge or freezer for everything. Then, having a few cans in the cupboard is always useful.
So the bottom line is that fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables are the best choice, as long as you eat them as soon as you buy or pick them. Frozen is the next best thing, and tinned fruit and vegetables are good for filling in gaps when you can't get them any other way, or you need to store food for long periods, or without refrigeration.
Yes, that's about it in a nutshell. Oh yes, and remember to make sure that any cans you buy are not leaking, as you run the risk of serious illness if you eat food from them. Otherwise, it's all about balancing what's best for you in your situation.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear a podcast on the roads of the future. Listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than three words and or a number for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed sentence. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. You're listening to SciTech with Jerry Watson. In today's programme, Professor Sally Griffiths is here to talk about the roads of the future and changes that may be coming to a street near you. Welcome, Professor Griffiths.
Thank you. It is nice to be here.
So, could you tell us about what is happening to our roads?
Sure. Most road surfaces we travel along in our cars are made from a black substance called asphalt, a material which is a combination of oil and stones. There are advantages to asphalt. It is not as expensive as other road materials, and it is a relatively safe surface to drive along. But it needs to be repaired frequently, and it has to be completely replaced about every 20 years. Also, the price of oil has started to increase, and asphalt has become less attractive as a road-building material. Scientists are now looking into different road surface materials which are kinder to the environment, cheaper and longer lasting.
And what have they discovered?
Well, one group in India has been investigating how recycled plastics could be used instead. They have found that, compared to asphalt, roads built from these materials do not need to be repaired as often. They also perform better in the heavy rains, which are frequent at certain times of the year. Another benefit is that their use reduces the amount of rubbish which is sent to landfill. Scientists in the UK are doing work on using recycled materials, such as bricks and stone, in road building. They have found that these materials are just as effective as traditional ones, and plans are underway to use them instead. And scientists in the US are looking at road surfaces in completely new and exciting ways. They have realised that roads could be used to collect enough solar energy to supply all of the homes in the country. To do this, they intend to replace asphalt with a super strong glass containing a layer of solar cells just below the surface. The glass would allow the sun's rays to be collected by the cells, and the energy could be supplied directly to each home or business along the road. These new roads have not yet been built, but this new material is now being tested in car parks across the country.
And I understand that work is also going on into road markings.
Yes, in the Netherlands. Researchers there are planning to use a special paint on the road, which reacts to very low or very high temperatures. During cold weather, for example, when the temperature falls to a certain point, images of giant snowflakes appear on the road surface to tell the driver that the road might be slippery and to take extra care. Glow-in-the-dark paint may also be used to cut down on the number of road lights. The idea is that during the day, the markings will charge up in sunlight, giving about 10 hours of light when night falls. These new developments will be in place in certain parts of Holland in the next couple of years. Other countries are also following these new ideas closely as they try to find ways to save money on road lighting. In the UK alone, it is estimated that there are 7.5 million street lights, each of which costs 15p a night to keep on, and about 27p if you include repair and maintenance. The Dutch are also looking at other ways of saving money on roads and making them pay. Another idea to cut the cost of lighting is to have road lights that are wind-powered. At night, these lights would turn on only when a car is present. They are also planning to create special lanes for electric cars, which would be recharged as they drive along. This would help the environment by encouraging more people to switch to electric cars.
Interesting. And are there any other plans in the pipeline?
Some are in their early stages and involve creating intelligent highways. These would use satellite technology located along the road and also in all cars, to monitor traffic patterns. This information could then be passed to drivers to help them avoid congestion. The cost of all these changes would be high, and many governments are looking into ways of using satellite technology in cars to make drivers pay for using the roads of the future. It may be that soon mobile phones will not be the only things that are pay-as-you-go. But probably the biggest change we will see on the roads is cars that drive themselves. In the last 10 years, progress in computing and satellite technology has meant that driverless vehicles may soon become a reality. These are cars that will be able to sense their environment, communicate with other vehicles, and navigate without the need for human input. It may be difficult for some people who love their cars to let go of the wheel, but there are several advantages to driverless cars. One is that the age restriction on drivers would no longer matter. For example, very old people with poor eyesight would be able to use the car on their own. Likewise, parents would no longer need to drive their children to school. The car could take them. The problem of parking the car near your destination would also be a thing of the past. Instead, the car could drop passengers off and park far away, where there is plenty of space, and return when it is needed. Also, the space required for vehicle parking would be reduced.
And are there any downsides to all this?
Well,
now, listen a second time and check your answers. You're listening to SciTech with Jerry Watson. In today's programme, Professor Sally Griffiths is here to talk about the roads of the future and changes that may be coming to a street near you. Welcome, Professor Griffiths.
Thank you. It is nice to be here.
So, could you tell us about what is happening to our roads?
Sure. Most road surfaces we travel along in our cars are made from a black substance called asphalt, a material which is a combination of oil and stones. There are advantages to asphalt. It is not as expensive as other road materials, and it is a relatively safe surface to drive along. But it needs to be repaired frequently, and it has to be completely replaced about every 20 years. Also, the price of oil has started to increase, and asphalt has become less attractive as a road-building material. Scientists are now looking into different road surface materials which are kinder to the environment, cheaper, and longer-lasting.
And what have they discovered?
Well, one group in India has been investigating how recycled plastics could be used instead. They have found that, compared to asphalt, roads built from these materials do not need to be repaired as often. They also perform better in the heavy rains, which are frequent at certain times of the year. Another benefit is that their use reduces the amount of rubbish which is sent to landfill. Scientists in the UK are doing work on using recycled materials, such as bricks and stone, in road building. They have found that these materials are just as effective as traditional ones, and plans are underway to use them instead. And scientists in the US are looking at road surfaces in completely new and exciting ways. They have realised that roads could be used to collect enough solar energy to supply all of the homes in the country. To do this, they intend to replace asphalt with a super strong glass containing a layer of solar cells just below the surface. The glass would allow the sun's rays to be collected by the cells, and the energy could be supplied directly to each home or business along the road. These new roads have not yet been built, but this new material is now being tested in car parks across the country.
And I understand that work is also going on into road markings.
Yes, in the Netherlands. Researchers there are planning to use a special paint on the road, which reacts to very low or very high temperatures. During cold weather, for example, when the temperature falls to a certain point, images of giant snowflakes appear on the road surface to tell the driver that the road might be slippery and to take extra care. Glow-in-the-dark paint may also be used to cut down on the number of road lights. The idea is that during the day, the markings will charge up in sunlight, giving about 10 hours of light when night falls. These new developments will be in place in certain parts of Holland in the next couple of years. Other countries are also following these new ideas closely as they try to find ways to save money on road lighting. In the UK alone, it is estimated that there are 7.5 million street lights, each of which costs 15p a night to keep on, and about 27p if you include repair and maintenance. The Dutch are also looking at other ways of saving money on roads and making them pay. Another idea to cut the cost of lighting is to have road lights that are wind-powered. At night, these lights would turn on only when a car is present. They are also planning to create special lanes for electric cars, which would be recharged as they drive along. This would help the environment by encouraging more people to switch to electric cars.
Interesting. And are there any other plans in the pipeline?
Some are in their early stages and involve creating intelligent highways. These would use satellite technology located along the road and also in all cars to monitor traffic patterns. This information could then be passed to drivers to help them avoid congestion. The cost of all these changes would be high, and many governments are looking into ways of using satellite technology in cars to make drivers pay for using the roads of the future. It may be that soon mobile phones will not be the only things that are pay-as-you-go. But probably the biggest change we will see on the roads is cars that drive themselves. In the last 10 years, progress in computing and satellite technology has meant that driverless vehicles may soon become a reality. These are cars that will be able to sense their environment, communicate with other vehicles, and navigate without the need for human input. It may be difficult for some people who love their cars to let go of the wheel, but there are several advantages to driverless cars. One is that the age restriction on drivers would no longer matter. For example, very old people with poor eyesight would be able to use the car on their own. Likewise, parents would no longer need to drive their children to school. The car could take them. The problem of parking the car near your destination would also be a thing of the past. Instead, the car could drop passengers off and park far away, where there is plenty of space, and return when it is needed. Also, the space required for vehicle parking would be reduced.
And are there any downsides to all this?
Well,
that's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you and good luck.